How would you like to win a 4-CD set of 45 Reformation hymns? It's titled Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church. Now here is how you enter this contest. First, like the Facebook fan page for Lutheran Public Radio, Sacred Music for the World, facebook.com/Lutheran Public Radio. Second, post an invitation for your Facebook friends to listen to Lutheran Public Radio. And third, send the text of your Facebook post and the number of your Facebook friends to contest@issuesetc.org. We'll give away this 4-CD set, Heirs of the Reformation, to the contestant with the best Facebook post and to the contestant with the most number of Facebook friends. We'll announce the winner on Monday, October the 1st. Participate in a Facebook contest for Lutheran Public Radio during the month of September.
Yesterday, our U.S. diplomatic post in Benghazi, Libya, was attacked. Heavily armed militants assaulted the compound and set fire to our buildings. 4 Americans were killed. This is an attack that should shock the conscience of people of all faiths around the world.
Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. The flag they served under now carries them home. May God bless the memory of these men who laid down their lives for us all. May God watch over your families and all who love them. And may God bless these United States of America.
The voices of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and President Obama reflecting briefly on the death of American personnel in Benghazi, Libya, and as the story unfolded throughout the rest of the week elsewhere in the Muslim world, is there an overarching reason behind these embassy attacks, these kind of street-level attacks, people climbing fences, and our embassies, our diplomatic outposts, apparently, well, relatively unguarded in a lot of cases, Muslim flags, jihadist flags being raised in the place of American flags and U.S. embassies and diplomatic outposts? It's an outrage, but why has it happened? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. We're back with you live on this Monday afternoon, September the 17th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Sergej Trifunovic will join us for the first half hour of the program. We'll get his thoughts on the Muslim attacks on U.S. embassies in the Middle East and on Israeli police being intolerant of Christian clergy. It's pretty bad there as well. A little bit later in this first hour of Issues Etc., we will remember, as the church did yesterday, 3rd century bishop and martyr Cyprian of Carthage. We usually hear about Alexandria as a center of, well, 1st through 4th century Christianity. Well, Carthage was as well for different reasons. We'll find out what role Cyprian played, especially during a time of intense persecutions for Christians in the early church. A little bit later, Dr. James Lamb joins us. We'll talk about adoption. He wants to talk about no unwanted children. And then Little Issues Etc. comment line, Little Issues Etc. email, responding to that on this Monday afternoon. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Dr. Sergej Trifunovic is a regular guest. He's foreign affairs editor of Chronicles, a magazine of American culture, author of several books, including The Sword of the Prophet and Defeating Jihad. And he joins us from Belgrade. Sergej, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to be back.
Is there, in your mind, an overarching reason for the multiple attacks on embassies and diplomatic outposts by the Muslim street, so to speak?
It is the hatred of the infidel, period. They don't need some dilettantes producing a pretty pathetic video to be fired up. There will always be something, whether it's Salman Rushdie, whether it's the Danish cartoons. And if a trivial incident like the production of this pathetic video will suffice, that really means that the rage is there all the time, 24/7. And that rage is only waiting for any excuse, really, to be vented in the way that we've witnessed over the past week. Now, the United States has tried very hard to buy some brownie points in the Islamic world over the decades. Let us not forget that the United States during the Cold War was promoting the idea of an Islamic bloc led by Saudi Arabia as a counterweight to the secular Arab nationalism of Gamal Abdel Nasser, the leader of Egypt, that the United States helped the Mujahideen in Afghanistan after the Soviets came in December of 1979. And Zbigniew Brzezinski even boasted of the brilliant idea he had to let the Soviets have their own Vietnam. Also, the policy, very consistent and hardline policy, of support for the Bosnian Muslim in Bosnia-Herzegovina and for the Muslim Albanians in Kosovo was largely motivated, not entirely, but to a significant extent, by the hope that it will be taken note of by the Muslims and that the United States will be granted some degree of respect and friendliness. And people like Nicholas Burns, the former Undersecretary of State, and the late Tom Lantos, the chairman of the House Foreign Relations Committee, and even in the very early stages of the Balkan War, Lawrence Siegelberger, the acting Secretary of State under Bush 1, have all said the same thing, which is, we hope that the Muslims will take note of our support for their co-religionists in the former Yugoslavia. We haven't seen any gratitude in any of those places and on any of those counts. The Uka brothers, the Albanians from the former Yugoslavia, plotted an attack on an army base in New Jersey. A young Albanian from Kosovo killed two U.S. airmen at Frankfurt Airport last year. The list goes on. The problem is that there is willful ignorance or self-deceiving blindness by the policy-making community in the United States about the nature of Islam itself. And for as long as they look for social, political, psychological, and other peripheral causes of the rage, they will, of course, miss the point. A glaring example was the statement by General Allen, the commanding officer in Afghanistan, that Ramadan fasting made the Afghan Muslims kill Americans and other members of the alliance in so-called friendly fire incidents. Well, it's curious that the Muslims have served under European officers in many theaters over the decades and even centuries, and we haven't noticed any problems with the Ramadan fasting syndrome. In fact, the SS officers commanding Muslims from Chechnya and Dagestan and Crimean Tatars, Albanian Kosovo Muslims, and the Muslims from Bosnia in the Hanjar Division and in the Skanderbeg Division boasted that they were some of the best troops that they have ever commanded. And not a single German officer was killed by a Muslim during the holy month of Ramadan or any other time for the whole duration of World War II. Likewise, during World War II, some 400,000 Indian Muslims from both India and what was later to become Pakistan served in the British Army under British officers, and also there were Muslim regiments and even cavalry units, elite cavalry units, in the Russian Tsarist Army. The list goes on. In all of those cases, there was a clear-cut hierarchical structure in which the Muslim knew his place vis-a-vis the powers that be and deferred to it and submitted to it. But when you come with the ridiculous notion of partnership, oh, we Americans, we are the partners of you Afghans in building a democratic society in which women will be liberated and girls will go to school, for that they only have studied contempt with murderous consequences. What we witnessed in Benghazi, however, was also criminal negligence by the State Department and other agencies in not securing the compound. Now, there are two explanations for this. Either they're idiots, which is, of course, possible, or else they didn't want to hurt the sensibilities of the Libyans by fortifying the consulate in Benghazi and by bringing a detachment of Marines. And, Ambassador Christopher Stevens and three others paid for that with their lives. We don't want to upset the Muslims. We've seen the same with the apologetic tone of President Obama's and Secretary of State Clinton's statements in the aftermath of the murders, where they initially focused in their statement on the condemnation of the video, and then went on to say that, of course, this doesn't justify violence. Now, this is what I can only call supine kind of attitude that can only breed more contempt among the Muslim fundamentalists and provoke more attacks. Because if the Americans are seen to be wussies who are pandering to Muslim sensibilities, even after their ambassador and three others are killed, then basically sky is the limit. We can do whatever we want. And to come back to your question, not only is there the permanent quantum of rage simmering in the Muslim world, but it has gotten worse after the U.S. support for the Arab Spring. Time after time, we see opinion polls where the United States has over 80%, sometimes 90% plus negative rating, and it is higher in Egypt today than it had been under Mubarak. Well, arguably, one could say that people didn't feel comfortable speaking up their mind to pollsters under Mubarak, but that only means that it had always been there, and now they feel free to speak up their minds, and that means that 4 out of 5 Egyptians feel that the United States is the great Satan and should be treated accordingly.
Let's take a break right there, Dr. Trifkovic. When we come back, I'll let you finish your thought. We're talking about Muslim attacks on U.S. embassies in the Middle East, and a little bit later in our conversation with Dr. Sergio Trifkovic, Israeli police being intolerant of Christian clergy. Stay tuned.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Does your church need a backup organist? The Virtual Organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
How can we fill the 400-year gap between the Old and New Testaments? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September is the Apocrypha, the Lutheran edition with notes. You can find out more about this new resource at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase the Apocrypha by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, the Apocrypha, the Lutheran edition with study notes. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about two issues, the Muslim attacks on U.S. embassies in the Middle East with Dr. Serge Trifkovic, along with the story we'll cover in just a minute, Israeli police being intolerant of Christian clergy. Serge Trifkovic is foreign affairs editor of Chronicles, a magazine of American culture, and he's written several books, including The Sword of the Prophet and Defeating Jihad. He joins us from Belgrade. Serge, pick up where you left off. You were talking about in Egypt in particular, this level of anger... toward the West and toward America in particular that was unexpressed before, and now that the Muslim Spring has passed through, is being expressed in all sorts of ways.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't say that it had not been expressed before, because wherever the local political circumstances allow it, it is expressed in a very violent way. We've witnessed it in Lebanon. Remember the blowing up of the U.S. Marine base 30 years ago, or in Mogadishu in 93. And let's face it, what happened in Tunisia, in Egypt, and in Libya is simply that the regimes that didn't want that sort of thing to happen were removed. And so the natural proclivity of the Muslim mob to riot against the great Satan felt empowered to give it a shot. But if we look at the history of relations between the West and the world of Islam, it had always been there. You had periodic riots against foreigners and Westerners in the Ottoman Empire and in the period of mandates between the two world wars. And what we are witnessing today is simply democracy. Democracy the way that the Islamists perceive it, which is the freedom to practice their religion in the way that inevitably entails hostility to the other, or in their meaning of the term, the infidel. It will only get worse, because the United States was perceived not only as weak but as stupid for supporting the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, for putting a great deal of pressure on Marshal Tantawi and the other generals belonging to the secular part of the Egyptian establishment to accept not only the Muslim Brotherhood majority in parliament, but also to grant Morsi, the Brotherhood's president, full powers and to give up on resisting the monopoly of power by the Ikhwanis, the brothers, that one official after the other coming from the United States, starting with Hillary Clinton, were telling them to do. Of course, her reward for that was being pelted with garbage and shoes and insulting the Arab world while visiting the city of Alexandria. And I can tell you with some degree of certainty that her life would be in danger if she were to go there again and entrust her security to the local police, military, and other agencies. The particularly worrying part of the Benghazi story is that the killers knew well in advance when Ambassador Stevens would be leaving Tripoli and arriving in Benghazi, and where exactly the so-called safe house as the alternative to the improvised consulate was located. Which means that this whole episode took place with active connivance of the Libyan security forces, and an additional proof for this, as if one were needed, is in the fact that the gunfire lasted for several hours. In other words, that the safe house was besieged and the Libyan security forces were perfectly well aware of what's going on but did not intervene to rescue the four American citizens. An additionally worrying aspect is that Ambassador Stevens himself seems to have fallen victim to the self-induced historical amnesia and enthusiasm, and he thought that he had performed enough services and provided enough favors to the Islamists in Benghazi that they would spare him. Because let's not forget that he was smuggled into the city in April of last year in the early stages of the uprising as the American liaison with the rebels, and that he was directly involved and instrumental in bringing Gaddafi down. And let us not also forget that he was photographed over Gaddafi's corpse, obviously rather pleased with the proceedings. So it's a classic case of blowback. It is a little bit like believing that you have tamed a wild beast by healing its wounds and feeding it, and then being devoured by it in the end. As I said in our earlier interview on Friday, it brings to mind Mary Shelley's Dr. Frankenstein and the story of the Golem and Bram Stoker's Count Dracula, where the victim is very often instrumental in bringing his downfall. And in the case of Chris Stevens, it's a sad and tragic story, of course, but the one that should remind us of the limits of human capacity to know and the danger of pride and arrogance.
It sounds like you're saying, Dr. Trifkovic, that with regard to the way that at least the current administration and the State Department is approaching the Muslims problem on the street and elsewhere, whatever country it may be, it sounds like we're pretty much doing exactly the wrong thing, either in advance of something like this or on how we publicly react to things like attacks on diplomatic outposts and embassies.
Well, exactly, and I derive no pleasure from saying I told you so, but my writings in Chronicles, and they're available either in print or online, have been warning repeatedly since the beginning of the process known as the Arab Spring that there is no gratitude in the world of Islam to an infidel for providing favors. There is only the contempt for the fool. And I also remember writing along those lines back in 2005 when Bush 2 administration pressured Mubarak to set aside 30% of the seats in the election to people who were not openly declared members of Muslim Brotherhood, but who were known to be affiliated to it. And all 30% of those seats were taken by them, and not by secular pro-Western tweeting yuppies speaking fluent English from Tahrir Square. Now, the reaction to the Benghazi outrage is actually worse than what you said, because I believe that the kind of shivering, supine response from the White House and the State Department and the tone of media coverage blaming the shady Coptic Christian from California implies that, in fact, people in Washington are scared of us Muslims, and therefore we can up the ante, and the next time, God knows what will happen, but when it happens, there will again be the morbid self-examination by the U.S. establishment and the utterly insane attempt to hush up the culpability of the perpetrator and to build up the blame on us. A good example of that, in my opinion, is the constant quest for peripheral, non-religious, non-dogmatic explanations for their behavior, and whether it is the sociological or the psychological or just touchy-feely New Age postmodern approach, for as long as you follow the Islamist peaceful and tolerant mantra, you will not get anywhere. It's a little bit like having an oncologist who is not allowed to diagnose cancer.
With only about a minute here, Dr. Trifkovic, what should the U.S. State Department and U.S. administration do or have done in reaction to the attacks on diplomatic outposts and embassies?
There should be an airborne unit from warships in the Mediterranean coming into Benghazi for a robust, violent response to it, and then a swift withdrawal and speedy disengagement. Instead of bringing the Marines in, the personnel from Tripoli should have been evacuated, all aid terminated, and the standoffish attitude of what you do in your God's forsaken Libya is your problem. We know you will still sell your bloody oil to us because without it you will have to eat sand and drink seawater, and we don't give a hoot for your democracy and your human rights. Do your own thing. And that should be the attitude to the Islamic world in general. Disengagement from the world of Islam and stopping the influx of the world of Islam into the United States. A moratorium on Muslim immigration, open-ended, open, frank, coupled with strict profiling of the kind that is applied by the Israelis at Ben-Gurion Airport.
All right, when we come back, we're going to take up another story with Dr. Sergei Trifkovic, foreign affairs editor of Chronicles, a magazine of American culture. We're going to talk about the Israeli police being intolerant of Christian clergy, the various kinds of, well, we can call it persecution and harassment of Christian clergy in Jerusalem. We'll take up that story and see what he has to say and an explanation for why that is. It's Monday afternoon, September the 17th. You're listening to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin.
What makes Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois so special? Our new members talk about the family atmosphere, the welcoming people, and the outstanding music. But most importantly, you'll be confronted with your sin and comforted with the assurance that Jesus has removed that sin so that you can live each day as His baptized and forgiven child. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church is at 612 North State Street in Freeburg, Illinois. Sunday worship is at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible classes at 10:20 a.m. Call 618-539-5664.
At steadfastlutherans.org, we've been called contentious. We've even been called the brothers of John the curmudgeon, and we may well be curmudgeonly sometimes. But we always have the best and clearest voices in confessional Lutheranism. Articles from Molly Hemingway, Martin Nolan, Clement Preuss, Todd Wilkin, and a host of regular contributors. Come check out the new Lutheran media. Always clear, always concise, always confessionally Lutheran. steadfastlutherans.org.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The political parties have completed their conventions and also finalized their party platforms. The Democrats and Republicans couldn't be more polar opposites when it comes to the life issues. Let's look at them, not in an effort to endorse any particular party or candidate, but to become educated citizens. The Democrat platform says it strongly and unequivocally supports Roe v. Wade and a woman's right to make decisions regarding her pregnancy, including safe and legal abortion. The Republican platform reads, "We support a Human Life Amendment to the Constitution and endorse legislation to make clear that the 14th Amendment's protections apply to unborn children." To read all of what each party has to say on the life issues, visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Messiah Lutheran, Seattle, Washington. Grace Lutheran, McPherson, Kansas. St. Paul's Lutheran, Bridgeport, Nebraska. Our Savior Lutheran, Raleigh, North Carolina. St. Paul Lutheran, Hancock, Maryland. Messiah Lutheran, Keller, Texas. St. John's Lutheran, Maple Grove, Minnesota. Grace Lutheran, Parker, Colorado. And Our Redeemer Lutheran, Harrington, Kansas. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach
by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click Support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click Support. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking to Dr. Serge Trifkovic about the Muslim attacks on U.S. embassies in the Middle East, turning to the story of the Israeli police and Christian clergy in Israel. Our call-in number, if you have a question or comment on the Muslim attacks for Dr. Serge Trifkovic, 1-877-623-6943. We are coming to you live this Monday afternoon. It's the 17th. Of September, 1-877-623-6943. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org or our Twitter address at issuesetc. Serge, can you explain to me? I was reading this story in the National Post, Israeli police intolerant of Christianity and clergymen. The story features something called a price tag attack. Apparently, moving to the Israeli street, it's not very safe to be a Christian there. Can you explain?
Well, first of all, Israel is an explicitly Jewish state in the way that traditional nation states of Europe used to be, but have given up long ago in favor of multiculturalism. In other words, a land belongs to whoever happens to be within its borders at any given moment in time. I don't mind the Israeli approach. I would actually dearly like the nations of Europe, North America, Australia, New Zealand, and so on, to rediscover the concept of proprietorship over land of their forefathers, and in particular, the free-for-all floodgates that were opened with the Immigration Act of 1965 was one of the greatest disasters in U.S. history. But the problem is that the attitude of some Israelis to non-Jews, and in particular Christians, is openly discriminatory. In particular, the ultra-Orthodox, who, by the way, are mainly welfare recipients and do not serve in the Israeli Defense Force, which breeds a great deal of resentment among ordinary Israelis, are indoctrinated from an early stage, from a very early age, into regarding Christians as second-class citizens. And what is lamentable is that the Israeli state has not taken measures to prevent this, or at least not to allow it in state-subsidized schools, because it would indeed be scandalous if there was a traditionally Christian country in the Western world where state-supported religious schools taught children to believe that the Jews are eternally damned because of Jesus' crucifixion and that therefore they should be regarded as pariahs. Now, I'm not saying that this extends to the Israeli society at large. In fact, I would say that a great majority of Israelis either secular or somewhat religious, and would be horrified at the thought of spitting at Christian clergymen the way that ultra-Orthodox children are taught to do. But there was a sad event at the monastery at Latrun, which is on the road from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. I know that place well because on several occasions I bought cases of their good wine and nearby, by the way, is the Museum of Israeli Armored Forces, literally walking distance from the monastery. And it is visited each day by hundreds of Israelis. There isn't ever a problem. They're welcomed, and there are tours of the monastery, the vineyards, the cellars, and all the rest of it. And the price tag attack is the insane and immoral notion by the Israeli settlers on the West Bank that the difficulties they face in legalizing their settlements and the pressure to which the Israeli state is subjected by some Western governments not to allow those settlements is automatically or should be taken as a black mark against the remnant of the Christian community in Israel. And in today's Israel, the Christians comprise about 2% of the population. At the time of the British Mandate ending in 1947, the Christians accounted for close to a half and certainly well over a third of the population. So, the city of Jerusalem, for instance, had 50 to 60,000 Christians at that time. Today, the community has dwindled to about 2,000. What is not widely known is that among the close to 2 million Soviet Jews who emigrated to Israel since the 1970s, a significant number are not Jewish by faith, but Orthodox Christians. Many of them converted, or their grandparents did, under the time of the Tsar, and some of them are not even properly speaking Jews, but simply claimed to be Jewish in order to get out of Brezhnev's and Gorbachev's Soviet Union, and they are not given the facilities necessary for the practice of their religion. It would, of course, be absurd, preposterous, to imagine for a moment that a large community comes into the United States and is not given the right to worship in the way they want, but in Israel, because they came in as putative Jews, it is regarded as improper for them to ask for a Russian Orthodox Church to be built. The list goes on, but to cut the long story short, the problem is not so much about institutionalized discrimination against Christians in the Israeli society. I've been to Israel 6 or 7 times, and I can say this with some degree of authority, but rather the culturally transmitted animosity that is inculcated in a significant segment of the Israeli society, and above all the ultra-Orthodox, and the reluctance of the state to grab the bull by the horns and to tell them to behave. And that's where the problem with the unwillingness of the Israeli police to protect Christian clergymen comes into play. The Israeli police is also reluctant to intervene against the ultra-Orthodox when they're breaching laws in other ways, whether it's with illegal settlements, whether it is with... Now, let me point out that for the current ruling coalition in Israel, the votes of the ultra-Orthodox are very important. And so there is also very basic political motive that you don't want to alienate them because the shaky coalition may not last.
So why are they reluctant to stand up for Christians against the ultra-Orthodox Jews? What accounts for that, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, because they don't feel that Christians are truly their fellow citizens. Only a Jew is probably an Israeli in the perception of even people who are not necessarily ultra-Orthodox, but also, as I mentioned earlier, because of the political aspect of the issues. It's a powerful voting bloc. It is, I believe, 12 to 15% of the Israeli population. It's not a productive segment of the Israeli population. They spend time reading Torah and arguing the finer points of the dietary laws. They have 5, 6, 7 children. They're on welfare. They don't serve in the army. And they're really a burden on the society. But to add insult to injury, they do not accept Israel as a legitimate state, because in their opinion, only when the Messiah comes back and Eretz Israel is rebuilt in the way that is explicitly the clerical and a state of God, if you will, can that state be legitimate. To them, a secular Israeli state that grants any rights to non-Jews, or for that matter, to the Jews who are self-avowedly agnostic or atheist, is blasphemous and sacrilegious.
So finally, with only about a minute here, Sergio, what is a Christian to do, especially these clergy here who have a permanent residence in Israel? What is their solution? We have only about a minute here.
It would be necessary for the Vatican and for other Christian denominations to lobby very strongly Western governments to put pressure on Israel to treat Christians as equal citizens, because for as long as those governments are as squeamish about protecting the rights of the Christians as they are about the abuse of Christians in the Islamic world, there is very little that they can do themselves. Back in the Ottoman times, the Russian Empire, the French Republic, the British Empire, and the German Empire even stood up for the rights of Lutherans, Orthodox, and Catholics, and the Turks obliged them. If something similar were to happen today, of course, there would be howls of rage. But unless there is help from the outside, the dwindling community of under 2% cannot do much by itself.
Dr. Sergio Trifkovic is foreign affairs editor of Chronicles, a magazine of American culture. He's author of several books, including The Sword of the Prophet and Defeating Jihad, and he joined us live from Belgrade. You'll find a link to his columns under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Trifkovic, thank you very much for being our guest.
It was my pleasure, as always. Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to turn our attention to a man remembered from the 3rd century, a man remembered yesterday by the church, Cyprian of Carthage. Carthage is no small beans when it comes to a center of early Christianity, so we'll talk about its role in early Christianity and the intense persecutions that Cyprian and his fellow Christians often suffered, how they reacted to it, and a theological controversy that rose from that persecution and the apostatizing of many Christians. When we come back, Dr. James Buscher of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will help us remember Cyprian of Carthage.
How would you like to win a 4-CD set of 45 Reformation hymns? It's titled Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church. Now here is how you enter this contest. First, like the Facebook fan page for Lutheran Public Radio, Sacred Music for the World, facebook.com/Lutheran Public Radio. Second, post an invitation for your Facebook friends to listen to Lutheran Public Radio. And third, send the text of your Facebook post and the number of your Facebook friends to contest@issuesetc.org. We'll give away this 4-CD set, Heirs of the Reformation, to the contestant with the best Facebook post and to the contestant with the most number of Facebook friends. We'll announce the winner on Monday, October the 1st. Participate in a Facebook contest for Lutheran Public Radio during the month of September.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues, etc.
Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, is a quarterly publication for the Confessional Lutheran, and they have a special 20th anniversary CD. This CD contains every issue of Logia for the last 20 years. It's a PDF file with search capabilities and bookmarks. This special anniversary CD is an excellent addition to your theological library. You can pre-order it for just $40. That's 50 cents per issue. Find out more at logia.org, logia.org.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the logo for the Issues Etc. Journal and Weekly Bulletin insert at issuesetc.org and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. Issuesetc.org, look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo, and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.